Welcome to One Sharp Sword, cutting through to what matters most with your host, Dr. P, Dr. Wayne Purnell, the breakthrough success coach and your powerful presence mentor.
Welcome to One Sharp Sword, cutting through to what matters most. I'm your host, Dr. P, Dr. Wayne Purnell, the exponential success coach and the president of Dynamic Leader Incorporated. We have on this episode, Dr. Kevin Gazzara. He has a long history of management, leadership, and executive coaching. And it's why I've invited him here, because our paths seem really similar and yet very, very different. And so from machinery to Intel to becoming an entrepreneur, Kevin's decades of experience give him the perspective needed to coach and to guide others. We're going to talk about creating engagement and high-performance teams. We're going to look at management and leadership, and we're going to look at keeping positive along the way. As always, there will be a bridge. I like to bridge the leadership stuff to the personal life stuff, because any of us can use what we learned from leadership lessons. We can use that in our personal lives and our families. So think about that. We're going to look at leadership and task balancing lessons as we talk about all that. Think about how this relates. So listen closely and welcome Dr. Kevin Gazzara. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Dr. P or Wayne or Dr. Pell, whatever. We'll mix them all up and it'll be very informal.
You can be very informal by calling me whatever you want. It's all good. Thanks for being here. So you do have a long history of working in a management position. You've spent a decade and a half with Intel, or was it longer than that? You've been an entrepreneur for 15 years and doing coaching for that long. So in terms of your management and leadership, you didn't wake up one day and go, I'm going to be an executive coach. Let's wind the clock back. I like to do that with my leaders, especially because it basically shows you start somewhere, right? You start somewhere, and then you go, wow, I have things that actually could help other people. So what was your path? What was your journey?
I think I had the normal leave it to Beaver, type of life. Anybody that knows that reference of, you know,
that wasn't so normal. They wanted to.
I was born and raised in Levittown, Pennsylvania. You know, my dad worked for the government. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. And we had, the two kids in the station wagon and the dog, and everybody lived in a kind of homogenous suburb of the Philadelphia area. And that was kind of that was my upbringing. It was kind of what was expected, what was showing up on a lot of the TV shows at the time. And, you know, kind of, I think all of us find kind of our passion. If we look back at what we did as kids, you know, that's where, particularly since we didn't know anything differently, we gravitated towards what we love to do. And what I love to do as a kid, I love to take stuff apart. I love to fix things. I love to build things and solve problems. I really enjoyed working, you know, doing things with other kids. And I was an organizer. When stuff wasn't happening in the neighborhood, you know, I put something together, and we'd do a fair, or, you know, we put some kids together for bike rides and those kind of things. And that was always kind of natural for me, and it kept me busy, kept me out of trouble. And because of the kind of the problem solving, the curiosity piece, you know, it drove me I went to Drexel for engineering, and ultimately ended up doing a half engineering, half business degree called Commerce and Engineering, 5-year program, great program. In fact, I still teach at Drexel at the moment, right? Even though I am in Phoenix, Arizona, I teach online for Drexel in Philadelphia.
What was the combo program called?
It's called Commerce and Engineering. So it's business and engineering, right?
Yeah.
And if people were to to look at our new degrees, you know, is very similar to what many other other universities were offering, which was industrial engineering, right? It's really more about productivity, human factors, you know, building teams, you know. So it had the soft side, which I really liked, and it had the hard side, you know, on the technical stuff. So good degree to have. And then I went off and did my MBA at Philadelphia University. And then ultimately, about 20 years ago, I finished my doctorate in management and organizational leadership. So it's been a path. The path hasn't been a completely linear path. But one of the things I did recognize, my first job out of college was for a company called DeLaval, who ultimately ended up being bought by Siemens. We used to do heavy equipment, big custom steam turbines and compressors, and, you know, work with lots of utilities and petrochemical plants. So that was my first 10 years. But what I found was I had this passion for computers. I had this passion for doing video. I got an opportunity at DeLaval to produce some videos. They built a studio, and I was intrigued by that. So I got to run the studio in addition to my regular job, which is, you know, as a product manager for them. And then when I found out that Intel had bought the digital video interactive technology, it was known as DVI, from RCA Labs in Princeton, New Jersey, which is 29 miles from my home. I said, man, I got to have that job. It has everything I want. It's got computers. It has video. It's local. I knew of Intel, and I knew, you know, it was a rising star at the time. I think I was employee number 25,000 something, you know, and I think right now it's 100,000 plus. So I got it. I got in early. I joined them in 1989. And it was a fantastic run. You know, I was came in as a customer marketing engineer, became a product manager, operations manager, and then I was a general manager, GM for them for a couple of years. But I think my claim to fame and what was best about Intel was Intel is filled with amazing managers and leaders, and it's truly a learning organization. So we got lots of time to do training and development. But in addition, as a manager, you were required to train for you to deliver courses 40 hours for the year. That was part of the expectations. And what I found is I just really loved doing that. So I moved from the technical side over into the human resource side. In the last 10 years there, before I retired, I managed Intel University and then ultimately Intel's management leadership development residential programs for the world for first and midline programs. And we did, we used to do 2,500 managers and leaders a year for the programs I had developed in 10 different countries. And when I retired from Intel in 2007 with two of my colleagues to start up our firm, Magna Leadership Solutions, we had just finished training our 40,000th manager. So I got pretty good at that. And yeah, my personal goal was retire at 50 and then go help smaller organizations and help other executives that, you know, didn't have $10 million budgets, you know, to get better.
That's great. And so how long ago you've been... you've been doing Magna Leadership Solutions for 15 years at this point?
Yeah, 07. So this will be our 17th year in June, right? Amazing. Every year has been better than the last. No complaints. We have what we call our Leading Forward Academy, which is a six-month leadership program, a transformational leadership program, completely turnkey that we get. You know, our sweet spot is probably organizations. We've done organizations as small as about 100, and we've done departments within larger organizations, typically in the 600 to 1,000 range. And we've been doing that for, you know, for almost 17 years. And it's been great, you know, getting to be able to see the change and, you know, be able to work with the executives at a at that level.
That's great. That's great. When you roll it out, is it typically a class of 10 or is it the class of 600?
No. Yeah. What we found is we've done classes as small as 6, uh-huh. For very specialized companies. We've done classes as large as 36. But what we found is that's just particularly, when COVID hit, we had to move everything from, in person to virtual. And we found that that's just a little bit too unwieldy to manage and give the people enough interactive time because it's an action learning as opposed to, us speaking. So we found that our sweet spot is at about 12 to 18, right? And if we can do, and that's what most of the programs do. And they're all that we don't do open enrollment. It's all done, where we focus on specific challenges of an organization and we take our foundational design and tailor it for whatever the manager needs at the moment.
That's great. That's great. Are there, so you said it's turnkey. Mm-hmm. So there are very specific concepts that you bring pretty much to every organization, adapting it to that organization.
Yeah. So the foundational there, workshops. So first of all, we don't do training, right? So that's the one thing that you won't see. You won't see anything that says training on our site we won't talk about training because when you talk about training, it's an expense. And what we really want the leaders to think about is this is an investment. And when you come to the workshop, you have to bring your real problems and challenges, just as if this is a real working day. And then we're going to give you a suite of new tools to apply to help you solve your problems. And there are 6 workshops, and we have the ability to expand it or, decrease this. But we found that there's this common theme of 6 different focus areas that we work on. That seems to get the transformational change, or actually does get the transformational change that you'd like to see. We focus on behavioral styles. We use DISC. Other people have used things like Myers-Briggs or the Big 5 or Berkman. We found that DISC is very, very manageable, understandable, and usable.
It's easy to administer and it's easy to talk about.
Yeah, and I've been part of the Target Training International TTI Success Insights groups. I've been part of them over 20 years. I actually sit on their research council. And the nice thing I like about their DISC is it's they do psychometric reports on it every 5 years. And the last one they did was on 120,000 people. And they integrate that with their brain lab. So I know that the tool that I'm doing is very, very well validated. There's lots of other DISCs out there, yes. Some free ones that are not validated.
Colors and animals and people.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So taking that instrument and turned it into all kinds of things. So yeah, I'm glad you're using a validated DISC. Do you do Colby at all? Just to bounce things around?
I know about Colby. We haven't used it. One of my colleagues in the mastermind I run. I actually run a mastermind for the last 10 years of all the people like me who have left Intel to go on their own. We have, I think, close to 30 now. And then we get together once a month. And several of my other colleagues use the Colby. Great instrument as well. But the six workshops we do is first
behavioral styles.
Behavioral styles, right? Then we move into communication and conflict, right? Because that's really a foundation. If you want to be a great leader, the one thing that you can do, and we did a study about, 10 plus years ago, for around using 1,200 managers and leaders. And what we found is the best managers and leaders, the ones that are most highly rated, the one thing they do differently is they're better communicators and better at dealing with conflict. So we do behaviors, we do communication, we move into understanding values, right? The stuff that drives us, the stuff that really motivates us. We use lots of concept like the concept of flow and some of the work that I've done for my doctoral research. And we move from there values into critical thinking and problem solving. So how do you do that? What tools can we give you for that? And then we let's see, that's four. And then we do workshop on leadership itself, right? And the last, let's see, I missed one.
Behavior styles, communication, values, right. Critical thinking, leadership styles, and
motivation and engagement. Duh. Right. So we have a session on motivating and engaging. Right.
Thanks.
Yeah.
That's great. I'm working on a massive project right now that I'm calling a culture of caring. And it's always great to talk to other leadership development specialists, experts, because, you know, we have similar concepts. We bring it in different ways. Mm-hmm. And that's what's great is that there is absolute room to have multiple ways of saying similar ideas.
Yeah.
So it's, again, that's one of the reasons you're here is I found what you're bringing very interesting. The whole idea of behavior styles, communication and conflict, you know, we were talking a little bit before the recording and my history is clinical psych. What got me into leadership development 40 years ago was when I was doing couples therapy with a gentleman and his wife, and this guy calls me and he asked me to do that thing I did with him and his wife and do it with him and his vice president. And it started with communication. It started with working agreements, and working agreements was what I called, it's how I imposed the idea of conflict resolution.
Right.
And then values, always values. We're going to start there. So love that. Love what you're bringing. It's really interesting. And the six areas, it's really interesting. So,
thanks. And, you know, one of the things I'll tell the audience is one of the things that we found, give you my best, you know, 1 minute of tips here is I had read a book called Brain Rules. And if you've read that or not, if you haven't, I highly recommend it by Dr. John Medina, who's a neuroscientist. And he basically said, hey, this is the way people learn. This is the way stuff is absorbed. You have to keep it interesting. You have to change things up on every 10 to 15 minutes or so. And so we went in and completely redesigned our academy 10 years ago when we did that. So that was the first thing is, and then you have to bring in real problems as opposed to, you know, and solve it, right? So our goal is at the end of each workshop that we do, usually like once a month and so forth, that, you know, we have a mastermind tied to it and we have weekly reinforcement messages. We have a tool called the Easy 360 feedback tool that tracks all of the progress. So you have a quantitative method to know, hey, am I getting better or not? You know, most of the training stuff is all kind of subjective. And we like to keep things, you know, particularly as an engineer, like to keep things and a researcher very, very objective. I want the numbers. I want you to be able to see that, you know, you're going from a 2.5 to a 4 out of 5.
Nice. Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. So what would you say are some of the leadership lessons along the way? What are people having trouble with in terms of, what's the, in your world, what's the leader's pain point right now? Or, you know, some of the top two or three pain points?
Well, let's see. I think one of the pain points, the leader's pain points is retention, you know, of hiring and retaining their best people, you know, particularly if you're talking about engineers and designers, you know, losing an engineer, you can go hire another design engineer. But when you lose the engineer, you're losing all that intellectual property that goes out the door and quite often to a competitor. So that's the first thing I'd say is that people are not retaining their. First of all, they're not doing a great job hiring the best people. And as you know, from your psychology work, is the tendency for all of us is we're going to hire people like us, And if you really want to build a great team, you need to have a little bit of diversity. So so the more you can have that diversity, the better team that you can build. So that's the first thing is the hiring and the retention. I think the second thing is that what we find, and when I work with a lot of executives, is they have a hard time keeping the teams motivated and engaged, right? Where they're not getting that discretionary value kind of out of the people, right? Where, you know, mm-hmm. comes to 5 o'clock and they're gone. And one of the questions we ask in the motivation and engagement workshop that we do is we ask people, you know, as a manager, as a leader, can you motivate others? And true or false? And we say this is digital. It's not, you know, it depends. You have to pick one of those. And most people pick that, yes, that you can motivate others. And as you know, that's not true, right? That you can create a motivating environment, right? By, you know, providing the right work environment, the resources, the money, the support systems. But ultimately, it's the individual's decision on whether they're going to stay motivated and engaged. So you, as a great manager and leader, you have to create that environment. But, you know, many of the HR people that we work with, particularly some of the newer HR people, they're out professing of like, you know, you got to go out there and keep and motivate your people. I think the intent is right. But what they really need to do is they need to create that environment. And ultimately, you're going to get them motivated. So that would be the second area.
Well, and that gets tricky when you're talking about motivation across a hybrid space, right? There's motivation internally, and we know that the research shows that propinquity, right? The proximity that is that you have to somebody, if you're seeing somebody over and over, you're mm-hmm. more likely that person is more likely to get the raise. Than somebody who's on Zoom or, you know, right. reports in or whatever. And then the environment, you know, the mistakes of, hey, we're going to throw a party and sorry if you can't make it, you know, go buy yourself a pizza and join us via Zoom. Yeah. And it's like, that's not a reward. You know, that's not the environment. So it becomes really, it becomes a big task to keep motivation or create a motivating environment, because that, from my perspective, and I think you'll agree with me, that is actually an individual exercise.
Right.
It's where leaders need to know what motivates one person isn't going to be what motivates somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I'll give you something that I had done 20, 30 years ago with my staff set when I was at Intel. And, you know, when I was studying, you know, I did all my research in particular around motivation, engagement, and flow, concept of flow. One of the things that I would do is we would, on the shared drive, I asked people to say, hey, put the number three things that you like to receive as recognition. And then, this can be dynamic, you can change it whenever you like. Right. And I want you to really think about it. And most people usually start with money, and eventually money goes away and they want something different. And then the second thing that in the second set of columns, I'd say, and how do you like this delivered? Do you like this delivered publicly or privately? Right. Because as we know from behavioral styles and values, yes. Once you understand that, certain people really appreciate it in a staff meeting or an all hands meeting, and other people really would just rather have it do it one-on-one in their office or on Zoom. So, and we used to keep that dynamic. And when I'd encourage all of the people on staff, hey, when somebody does something, the other thing we did was for recognition is it should be above and beyond. You shouldn't be recognizing people for doing their job, right? Yeah,
thanks for showing up.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. You showed up on time for, you know, you haven't shown up in the meeting on time in 10 weeks and you showed up. So here I'm going to recognize you. No. You don't recognize people. The first thing is you don't recognize people for doing what they're supposed to be doing. And the second thing is for the recognition, you need to make sure that it's going to be taken in the way that it's intended. Right. So that you need to be careful about overuse of recognition. And the one thing is one of my rules was absolutely no recognition for diving catches. Like if you've been delinquent on, you know, you're planning and you have a 10-week project and you're supposed to get, you know, 10 elements done, one per week. And in week 9, you haven't started it yet and you manage to pull it out at the last minute. That is not rewarded. Now, mm-hmm. other people jump in to help you, you know, outside of their job. That's a little bit different. But the key is I think we have a tendency, at least what I've seen in lots of industries that I've worked with, is the tendency is to reward the diving catches. And usually the problem is the diving catches turn in, they turn off. They are diving catches because of the inability of the individual to plan, get the right resources, build a team, maintain communication, all of the other elements, and they bring it upon themselves.
You are listening to One Sharp Sword, cutting through to what matters most with your host, Dr. Wayne Purnell. You know you are bigger than the life you are leading. It really is time to attend to that thing you've wanted to do or have, but you've been putting off. It's time to step into that dream you've parked for someday. It's time to claim true well-being, both personally and professionally, without giving up the success that got you here. It's time to check out Dr. Purnell's signature small group retreat, the Exponential Success Summit. Explore exponentialsuccesssummit.com. Seats are extremely limited as this is a very special small group event. www.exponentialsuccesssummit.com.
So I said that I would be building bridges between the leadership concepts and kind of daily life and what you can do in your family and such. And I love the idea of looking at motivation and mm-hmm. what three things do you like as motivation. And it's interesting, all of the studies that I've seen show that money was at number 5. During COVID, it actually popped up to number 2 mm-hmm. on people's lists. And now it's starting to slide again. What people really want is acknowledge me, recognize me, show me that you know I'm human. And
show me the love, right?
Yes. Yeah. We don't talk about love in an organization. And yet that's really like people aren't connected until they feel connected. And that starts with the manager or leader. And, right. and so it's like, do you know, like think of your team and think of the third person on your team and what's their eye color? Like, have you even bothered to recognize that? Like, do you know them that much that you can say, oh yeah, they're blue or brown or whatever? It's like, do you know? And so what three things do you like for recognition? I think that's important for each of us to actually check, you know, what do we like? What's a great way of being recognized? It's like, you know, so that's great. Is it money? Money's always nice. And that's not usually a primary motivator when you get down to it. It's a great thing to have. It's a great thing to use to support. And it's not usually primary when you actually get down to it. How do you like it delivered? It's a great question. You know, some people do. And I've seen leaders blow this badly. But also, like at home, what does each of your family members, and that could be a spouse, it could be a child, like what do they value? What would motivate them? And really finding that out. And you talked about be careful about overuse of recognition. Hey, good job. Hey, good job. Hey, good job. But also one of the things is, if you're going to give recognition, be very specific,
right?
Mm-hmm. Right. It's not, hey, see everybody, good job today, is a really bad management statement. It doesn't help anybody. Makes you feel good as the manager going, good job. Yay. So I told people good job. But really catch people doing the thing mm-hmm. that made the difference and be as specific as you can. And, you know, tie it to the values of the company. Like, you did this and that helps our department or our family or me personally whatever. And thank you, because that ties to the values that we have as an organization.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. I think the one thing that you can do, well, first of all, anyone that hasn't read the book Drive by Daniel Pink, that's the first thing you want to do. I mean, Daniel Pink is an aggregator. He's taken lots and lots of different topics and brought them together. It's a really easy read. It's all based around some really good research. I think the number one thing that he talks about in there with, you know, how you stay motivated is, you know, autonomy, mastery, and purpose, right? That you give the people individual autonomy, right? So you give them the ability to feel under control. You know, great leaders, you know, managers manage things and leaders, you know, lead people. For autonomy, you want to tell people what has to get done and hold them accountable for it. How they do it, you should leave up to them, right? Now, it doesn't mean that you don't train them and so forth. If you have a certain way to do something, you shouldn't be imposing the method to get there. As long as they're getting there, you know, with boundaries, you know, using the right resources and, you know, not ticking off a lot of people and so forth. You give them autonomy. Second thing is you need to make sure they have mastery. And mastery is that they're continually learning and developing and just getting better at not only at the stuff that you need for the workplace. You want to do that check-in with them to make sure they're getting better at things that they want to get better at. And the last thing is the purpose, as you had mentioned. It's making that tie to, hey, you know, because you stayed over the weekend and you finished this project, you know, the one thing the leaders have a tendency to say is, hey, we're going to make our bonuses, or we're going to get, you know, we're going to get raises. And that's absolutely the wrong thing to do. Is you want to tie to the purpose of, you know, my son-in-law works for a big, he's a QC person, QC manager for heart valves, right? So, so when his team performs, rather than saying, hey, you know, we met all the schedules and this, we didn't kill anybody. And this is right. But what he said is, you know, what you realize is we were able to get, you know, 400 additional valves out to people. And mm-hmm. That's another 10 years of life that they're going to have with their grandchildren, right?
That's amazing. That's
completely different than, you know, 400 valves at, you know, 10,000, right? So you have to make sure that
you made our quota. Yay.
Right. You tie it to the purpose. And if you can do that, generally things are pretty good. I mean, it's not rocket science here. And then I think the other thing that Pink talks about in his book, which I like, which goes back to your point about money, is what he says is you have to make sure you can take money off the table, right? So that if at the point where you're not making your mortgage and, you know, you're ending up in deficit at the end of each month, or you really, really need to get this next lump of money so that you can move out of a housing environment that's not conducive to you. Once you can get that off the money off the table, then you can start focusing on the stuff that's the true motivators. But our tendency, particularly for people, you know, we work a lot with call centers and service organizations where they're hiring people in at entry level, you know, minimum wage kind of jobs. And the challenges for them is, you know, you on Maslow's hierarchy, right? You want to try to get.
I was just going to say Maslow's. You're talking Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and
yeah,
when people are focused on their survival,
right?
You know, I need to show up to get this paycheck to go to the next job or whatever. That's a different mindset and a different kind of motivation.
Yeah, and the key is you as a great manager and leader, you need to recognize that. And we always say, meet the people where they are, right? So a focus, and if that's what they need, let's focus on how do we get them additional dollars, right? You know, if they've met the foundation, let's figure out what's next for them. You know, maybe they're challenged where they really want to manage, but they don't have the skills. Let's get them, you know, educated on that. So the key is there was a great study, and you probably know this, people know this, done by a guy named Marshall Goldsmith, right? So everybody knows, at least in our industry, right?
Not everybody, not all of our listeners or viewers are going to know Marshall Goldsmith.
Yeah. So Marshall, Marshall did a study over 20 years ago, about 20,000 people. He gave me a copy of the study, which I was very, very grateful for, because I don't think it was ever officially published. And one of the things that he found, which I thought was fascinating, was if you really want to get the behavioral change that you're looking for, that your feedback mechanism, your engagement mechanism with the people is all about frequency, not intensity. So if you as a leader, right, for people listening today, how can I get my leadership better? First thing is figure out ways to be a better communicator. That's the first thing. And then the second thing is as you become a better communicator, rather than having that meeting once a month for an hour to give feedback to your people, is meet with them 15 minutes a week, right? It's having that continual being able to adjust things or change things in an iterative way that gives you the ability, one, to make a deeper connection, and two, to make sure, if things go wrong on day one, on day 30, when you meet with them, that's the bad time to figure out, oh, this is a problem, you should be doing something different. But if you're meeting with them on Friday of that week, 7 days is a whole lot better than, 30 days.
Absolutely correct. Just the whole idea of propinquity is a great word that one of the leaders I had recently interviewed talked about. And that is a fancy term for being close to somebody, being in a proximity with them that allows each of you to get to know the other better and build a bond. And so the more that you can be in front of somebody, acknowledge them, have them give you feedback, that's so perfect. What's the thing about positive intelligence? Should we talk about that? And then
we can absolutely talk about that.
So, and then task management, and then and then we got a wrap. So yeah.
All right. So we'll do the spark note or cliff note version of these. If people even know what those are, I'm okay. Really showing my age. Positive intelligence is a book. Highly recommended. I had gotten certified a couple of years ago in positive intelligence. I run a 6-week program, an open enrollment program for people that are interested. A six-week program, it's all virtual. And basically, at a very high level, what I'll say is the guy who wrote the book, Shirzad Shamin from Stanford, awesome book, very well written, easy to read and understand. He's taken the concept of emotional intelligence that was done by Daniel Goleman, some work by Howard Gardner. He's taken some things like from David Rock, from neuroscience. He's put all these different concepts together. And what he's done is he's taken, essentially, he's advanced emotional intelligence as the foundation, which is very descriptive of what to do. And he's really created a prescriptive methodology. He brings in mindfulness and meditation and all the different things that feed that. And if you really want to know, in fact, one of the things that we do, or that I do particularly when I do executive coaching, is I put all of the people that sign up to work with me as a coach, is I put them through the positive intelligence program. That's just part of the what I include. And what it will do, and if you go to pqtrainingandcoaching.com, which is my site, it'll give you a quick start so you can take the assessment for free. And what it will do is it will tell you your saboteurs, the 9 saboteurs that you have that keep you from advancing. And then it'll also talk to you about how your sage portion of your brain is that works with those. So once you understand that, it gives you a much, much deeper understanding. So wonderful program. Well done. It's an app that runs on your phone, so you get reminders for doing all mindfulness stuff. And it really helps you build those neural pathways that are so necessary as a leader, so that when you get to the situation, the catastrophic situation, that you can maintain that clarity to be able to help people, where you can demonstrate your resilience.
That's great. All right. So I'm going to have I'm going to have show notes, and in the show notes, they will find magnaleadership.com.
Right.
They will find PQ training and coaching.com. And then you're going to talk about a gift for our listeners and viewers.
Yeah.
But first, talk to me about task management.
Yeah, the task quotient. Right. So once again, we'll do the abbreviated version here. So when I did all my doctoral research, just a little over 20 years ago, I wanted to show that there was a correlation between task balance, right? So each of us does three different types of tasks. If you look at your day-to-day work, you do routine tasks, like email and so forth, very predictable, have to get done in the moment. You do troubleshooting tasks, unpredictable, also has to get done in the moment. And you do project tasks, right? Like finishing your taxes, for example, is a great projecting example.
What was the middle one called? What'd you call the
troubleshooting? Or problem solving is the same thing. And what I found through my quantitative research was that I wanted to see, is there a relationship? Each one of us has there's 496 different mixtures of those three. And if I can determine your mixture of what motivates you, I was able to prove that you can raise job satisfaction, motivation, engagement. And then we did some additional work with another doctoral student of mine on empowerment, that it actually raises the sense of empowerment once you can kind of start structuring your day that works for you. And it'll give you a split. So for me, my ideal day or week or month or year, whatever you want to look at it, I like about 50% project work. I like about 30% troubleshooting work. And I like about 20% routine work. And what I do is each day I structure my days because I have a different cadence. Project work I can do for about 2 hours, troubleshooting about 90 minutes, routine work 30 to 45 minutes. What I do is, rather than doing Tuesday is the project day to write the new course or do the outline of the book or whatever, what I do is I break them into two-hour segments and I split them up. So I go from project to routine to troubleshooting problems I need to do, and then I repeat it, and then at the end of the day, one, I've gotten the stuff done, but I don't feel drained. I feel energized and I want to come back and do it again. And if you have the ability in your job to do some restructuring rather than redesigning or do some redesign of your task splits, you can create a motivating environment every single day.
Amazing. I'm smiling so big as you were talking about that. When I write my books, typically I've done it in 2-hour blocks,
mm-hmm.
and 20-minute segments in those 2-hour blocks, so that I'll work for 20 minutes, I'll get up, I'll, get more water, hit the bathroom, whatever, stretch. And then because it's 20 minutes, it's like, there's something that compels me to get back into it. And knowing that it's only 2 hours doesn't feel like I'm spending all day writing this thing, right? So as you're talking, it's an interesting thing to think about. We all have a rhythm. We have a time of day that we prefer for certain tasks. What would you call the distracting tasks? Things like, well, I've not only checked email, but I got a Facebook notification, and that Facebook notification led me to watch 17 videos.
Well, the thing is you need to manage your distractions, right? But you have to do it. You have to turn, when you're work when I'm working on an article or a book or whatever, you have to turn the other stuff off. You just have to do that, right? Because the restart time that you have to do from a distraction usually extends the amount of work that you can get done by 50% additional time to be able to do it. So you have to be able to stay focused. You have to be able to stay in the zone. You have to stay in flow. That was the other thing that I did with my task, the task quotient that I designed, on this balance. Was I was fortunate enough and very, very privileged to have on my committee Dr. Chik-Sing Mihai, who was the author of Flow. Right. So I was trying to expand his his theory. So he said, yeah, hey, I'll work with you. And the assessment we're going to give away is the one that I developed with him.
That's together. So great. Yeah. I think it's worth underscoring that people think about being great multitaskers. And the truth is there's no such thing as multitasking. Right. It's about toggle tasking. And you shift from one to the next and to shift back. And what you just said, there's been great research that actually validates.
Right.
It extends the time of the task by 50% when you're, oh, I can do it all. No, don't do it all. Get really focused. That's where flow comes in. Great. You've hung with some amazing people, and your contributions are going to be already are and will continue to be amazing. So I'm so glad you're here. You've got I'm going to say the link, and then you're going to tell me what it is, and then we'll say the link again. Ready?
Sure.
Magna, it's MAGNA, magnaleader.co/gift, all capitalized letter for gift.
Right, that's correct. Right. And okay. What that is if it's a 5-minute assessment. This is the one that I developed with Dr. Csikszentmihalyi on flow, the author of flow. Or people that aren't familiar with flow, how do you get in the zone? That was returned back in the 90s. And what that'll do is that you'll take that, you answer those 15 questions, and you will instantly get your report that will identify your ideal task balance of how you can stay most motivated and engaged. And like I said, if you have the ability in your job to be able to structure that, it can make a big difference. Now, if you're a line worker or you're feeding plastic into a machine, and that's what you have to do for 8 hours. Having that ability to work between project and routine and troubleshooting is going to be a little bit more challenging. Not impossible, just a little bit more challenging. But if you're an executive, if you're a project manager, if you're a manager or a leader, I'd say 95% of the people we work with have the ability to manage the balance.
Also, I'm going to say, think about, even if you've got a job where you're working in a warehouse or, you're fixing machinery. And our audience does range from bank presidents to machine operators. So it's great. And all are welcome here. And here's the thing. On weekends, you could still look at how do you balance your tasks.
Of course. Yes, absolutely. And even if you're like working in a warehouse where you have where things go wrong and you have to do some troubleshooting, or there's a big project that they're doing an expansion, or there's regular routine work for you have to do every day just to keep things running. And you have the ability to structure that in the blocks and in the frequency, then you can make a difference. The only time we found where it's really, really difficult is where you're locked into a single position and you're essentially doing what automation can do. Right.
Right.
So.
Right. All right. I'm going to give the link one more time. Magna Leader, MAGNA Leader, LEADER.co/ all capitals, GIFT, GIFT. And that's the only part that's all capitals. That's awesome. Anything that we left out, anything you want to add, last amazing insights, anything you can throw in here?
Two things. I think the first thing is if you really want my leadership model and what that looks like of how to build the team, I encourage people to get our book. It's called The Leader of Oz, right? And essentially, it's the methodology. We took the story of the Wizard of Oz, and we created a business parable about this company in Kansas that gets whisked away and dropped in the Silicon Valley. And you got the wicked VP from the East and the wicked VP from the West. So it's fun. It's fun, but really, it's heavily academically grounded, and it really tells you and it shows you through a story of how do you build a great team, the things you have to do. That's the first thing. And then second thing I would say is that we just launched this yesterday. We launched our site, which is coachsultants.com. Coach Sultants, which is coaching and consulting.com. So one of the things we do is we offer executive leadership. And one of the things we found, Dr. P, is that most people don't know if they need really understand if they could benefit more from a coach or a consultant. And what we've done is, so we do what we call coachsulting, where we do heavy coaching, which is all the reflective pieces. And we also provide the leadership elements necessary to come out of the coaching. And I will say, if you want to get your CQ, your coach quotient, you can go to the site. There's a quick assessment on there as well. And you can find out, what's your degree of strength and which would you benefit more from?
So good. Yeah, it's interesting when you go into an organization, when I do, when you do, it naturally is a little bit of coaching, a little bit of consulting, coachsultants.com. Very good. All of those links will be in the show notes. I am so appreciative of you being here, Dr. Kevin Gazzara. And I assume we can find you on LinkedIn as well.
Yeah, please connect with me on LinkedIn. You can send me an email, kevin@magnaleadership.com. One of the things, if you want to talk about any of these topics, I will promise you, I will respond within 24 hours, and you will get absolutely no sales pitch from me. I really want to just help you. And if I can help you, great. If not, I'll point you in a direction where you can get help.
That's awesome. All right. Look for Kevin Gazzara. I'm going to spell Kevin's last name because he hides an extra Z in the middle. G-A-Z-Z-A-R-A, Kevin Gazzara. And I just thank you so much. It's been a fast kind of time together, fast session. So I appreciate you being here. And with that, we'll give it a wrap.
It's been a pleasure, and thanks for what you do to help others get better.
Awesome. Very good. Very good. It is a pleasure. It truly is. This is One Sharp Sword, cutting through to what matters most. My guest today is Dr. Kevin Gazzara, and please like and share this episode. Please comment on it. We love to have the word spread. There's so much information in this. Please also go look at what Kevin's got and what he's offering to you. So check the show notes for sure. Again, this is One Sharp Sword, cutting through to what matters most. I am your host, Dr. P, Dr. Wayne Purnell, the Exponential Success Coach and the President of Dynamic Leader. We will see you here next week. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you for listening to One Sharp Sword, cutting through to what matters most with your host, Dr. P, Dr. Wayne Purnell, the Breakthrough Success Coach and your Powerful Presence Mentor.